Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, here we are with our last segment. I hope you listened to that commercial before we came back, because the word transformational is going to be operative now. In this segment, I welcome John Nelson, who's the founder and president of Business Transformation and the Leadership Partners from Wisconsin. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Zara.
Terrific. Well, great fun, and we're going to introduce John quickly. He's a speaker, advisor, consultant, author, and a thought leader with 25 years of experience in general management, entrepreneurial, corporate senior, and executive management roles. And in addition to launching his career in broadcast media, TV, and radio, so he's not going to be any rookie, the dynamic this morning, it actually followed years of working in sound production and being a musician with his own band. John's external consulting clients over the years have included some of the most respected companies across a very diverse portfolio of industries, Fortune 50, mid-caps, and startups. So armed with his Bachelor of Science in Industrial Relations from Iowa State and a Master's from the University of Minnesota in Industrial Relations and HR, John is a former HR executive who really successfully aligned human capital strategies and the HR functions to the strategic needs of the business. So again, the operative word again is strategy. Also, having led business and leadership events now in more than 20 countries and four continents, no surprise that John is recognized for his forte in transformation, truly within complex, large-scale, and organization-wide initiatives. So, no surprise again, the right match for Circles of Change. So, John, I thought we might start out in helping our listeners who might not be as versed in or having succumbed to or had to struggle with the difference between organizational change, per se, and this bigger word of transformation.
Sure. Thank you, Zara. Well, very nice opening. I appreciate the kind word.
Yeah, my pleasure.
It's been many years since I've played in music or ran sound, so it's great to be on the radio again.
You bet.
So, yeah, this is a common thing we hear in the field. There are a lot of practitioners out there practicing change management, and typically that's applied in organizations that are going through some sort of step change. It could be a new system being implemented in the organization, maybe a new sales process, mm-hmm. a whole host of things that organizations have to implement or change in order to progress their business. Transformational change, and we're seeing a trend more and more towards whole system transformations.
That's
this really
awesome.
Is where organizations are needing to take a more holistic view and make a pretty significant organizational change in the way they either go to market or organize themselves as a company or act or behave, or the kind of culture that they have to instill in order to drive their brand into the marketplace. And when we come in, we work with them on being clear about that brand and that strategy and which markets they're serving in. Are they organized the right way? Do they have the right governance and structure? Do they have the right work activities, processes? And do they have the skill and the talent and the people to execute? And we almost always come to the topic of culture.
Mm-hmm. Isn't
so
true, yeah.
Absolutely. There is the environment aligned to and related to the brand promise that you're trying to project to the marketplace, that align with the strategy and where you're trying to go.
And in some regards, if I might interject, this idea that classically companies will say, well, we first start with our employees as the base of the pyramid, then we have our products and processes, then we have our strategy and know-how that tie it together, and then ultimately we get to financial success, customer satisfaction, financial success. And I think, business transformation consultants like us actually flip the model upside down and say, you need to first start with that whole connectivity of your people.
You do, and you have to give them the context for the connectivity.
Yes.
I have one client right now that's working to really change their model to a globally integrated organization. Historically, they've let their regions around the world to run autonomously, and they know that they need to change the way they go to the market. They need to get synergy. They need to be better collaborative players across the regions to optimize, what they're trying to get done, and to build a brand that's a true global brand, which mm-hmm. is their objective right now. So you have to really give the people purpose, and they have to understand the reason for the change. They have to be involved with some of the choices about, well, how are we going to work differently, which is a very common breakdown in change and transformation initiatives. Is you know, there's a lot of promotion that goes on. There's a lot of campaigns. There's a lot of communications talking about this new direction. But there isn't an investment in actually changing the way work gets done or the way decisions get made so that people are empowered and they know what they need to do differently.
And any backsliding in the midst of the pontification, as you and I would call it, will cause people to stay right where they are and say, eh, this too shall pass.
Well, and that's, it's very interesting. When we talk to leadership teams about the transformation that they're undergoing, one of the first things we talk about is, well, what have you done in the past? Have you made other efforts to drive a similar change or other kinds of organizational change? And what was the effect? Because they have to overcome that as well, right? Whether the good and the bad. They may have had successful change and they may have had failures. And we always warn our executives, you know, you don't get many second chances with change. As soon as you start to reintroduce new versions of change, a year or 2 years later, people get skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to question. And then, to your point, they start to step back and just wait it out. They go, well, it's another management fad. It's another initiative. It, too, will pass. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to keep my head low. I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing, and the next thing will come.
You know, one of the things that you had mentioned in our preparing for our conversation today is that, you know, there are different people that are equipped in different ways to help move an organization forward. And there's room for everybody to play, but we need to be really distinct and help, particularly if we need to make a distinction between those who are individual contributors versus managers versus leaders of leaders, right? So there's
Absolutely.
Some really important lines. And by the way, we need to celebrate if there's opportunities to refit someone if it's not working well for them or the organization.
Right. Yeah, we refer to it as career stages. It's mm-hmm. just an easy way to think about where you are in a transition through your career. And when it comes to transformation efforts, we oftentimes spend a lot of energy and time with the top two layers, which tend to be leaders of the enterprise. So even though they may wear a functional hat, they may be the chief financial officer or the chief information officer or head of human resources, they wear an enterprise hat. They really have to act and behave in the best interest of the entire enterprise opposed to their function. And many leaders struggle with that. They get promoted up through the organization because of their competence in their field. They're very astute at what they do technically and functionally. And hopefully they've gotten to that level because of their ability to lead. And it's the step below that, the leaders of leaders. So they usually come up, they're managers themselves, very good technically at what they did. And because of that success, they are recognized and promoted to be the heads of a department or a function, and then have leaders reporting to them, so that then they become a leader of leader. And this is where the work really has to change, their focus, mm-hmm. their energy. They can't depend on the technical success that got them there. They're going to have to let go of the work. You know, we might mm-hmm. find micromanagers right. at this level who mm-hmm. haven't discovered the transition, and as a result, they're still holding on and trying to do the detailed work and
well,
probably frustrating
because,
some of the people.
Yeah, man, because, by the way, that's how they've always been incentivized, rewarded, and recognized. So now to change up the game for them. You know, John, with your opportunity to work across so many different industries, different size companies and the like, are you finding some interesting common themes or trends across, you know, let's say that leader of leaders group then, that you've got the chance then to help deploy that across organizations?
We are. There very consistently are common topics that are surfacing around the culture of the organization and around the requirements of those leaders to lead in the new environment. So it might be just the nature of the client base that we have, but the majority are global, and many of them are going through some form of transformation, which usually includes getting more synergy and be more connected organizationally. So they're trying to get more collaboration. They're trying right. to be more innovative. They're trying to get to market faster. And that requires that enterprise leadership, and it requires that ability to not just act in the interest of your silo or your function.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to your point, often people are raised that way and they're incentivized that way. Their goals and objectives are about...
Oh, and they like it that way, by the way. Hey, I like hanging out with people like me, you know,
That's
so
right,
to speak.
And there were some earlier folks that commented on people's feeling about control, and yeah. people like to operate in the space that they have full control.
Mm-hmm.
What we'll see in the transforming organizations, this collaborative behavior doesn't come natural. Mm-hmm. It's against the grain of the traditional control and power structures of organizations, but it's absolutely necessary for the company to be successful. We have, there's one organization I worked with that's got about 250,000 employees. They're in 66 countries around the world and over 70 business units, very, very distinct and different. Mm-hmm. And their customers, large B2B customers, were complaining that there would be 7 or 8 representatives from that company showing up in the lobby every day. Exactly. And they're bumping into each other in the parking lot. And they're not integrated.
And they may not even know one another.
They don't even know each other.
And then they get different contract terms that are playing out. Oh, yeah, we've seen that's a common challenge. And then at the end of the day, if you're not careful from the standpoint of the company, you can find yourself having to negotiate different terms and conditions or being driven by one versus the other.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
As part of the transformation that being collaborative and integrated and having a very clear view of the customers in the marketplace and how we interface with them was key to the transformation. And what we ended up doing, just a creative exercise we did with one particular group, is we took a group of leaders. It was part of a leadership development program, world-class program, 5 weeks or 5 weeks together over an 18-month period.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And one of the sessions, we actually went to a very large B2B customer, and I worked very closely with their chief learning officer to make arrangements, but we had the two CEOs in the room. And we had several other interfaces between the two organizations present. And the leadership team was given some concepts about how should we, as leaders, drive a more integrated partnership, because this is what we do. This is our business. This is where we're heading organizationally. And we did breakouts with different aspects of their business, from business development to some technology areas to some other supply chain connections that we shared with that particular client. And they spent 2 days on site, as part of a development program. At the end, they reported back out to these two CEOs, people that you probably would know from these very large companies. And it was a very powerful experience. And I remember a few of the leaders walking away going, you know, in the past, I would get a call and they would say, we need one of your people to help on a project with client X.
Right.
And he would go and find whoever had a little extra time on their plate and tell them to spend as little time as possible with these
folks. Get the job done, yeah.
So you can come back here and deliver on my results. He said, I have a completely new perspective. He goes, maybe I'll go next time, or I'll pull my very best folks to the table so that we can really represent the company well and take an enterprise view and approach to driving this important business.
Well, and I'm sure actually that leadership development experience, John, that you've helped clients do that even with two departments that may even sit down the hall from one another, but they don't have that little level of understanding of the power of collaboration.
Yeah, another great story. I was doing last November an offsite with 55 leaders from an insurance financial services company. And interestingly enough, similar to our business model, we talk strategy, capabilities, and cultures. So where are we going? How are we going to go to market? How do we differentiate against our competitors? What capabilities do we need to strengthen in our company to deliver that promise? And then do we have the right culture to facilitate the change? And they needed to change their operating model internally. How do departments interact? How are they structured? How do they interface? And it turned out through the course, and I hadn't had a lot of exposure with this company prior to the offsite, but some very critical conflicts in the organization surfaced during that meeting.
You bet. Yep.
And we brought them to the surface, and we talked about them trying to implement some business-facing shared services centers and how they are interfacing with the more direct brokers that go direct to the customers. And, I had to shame them a little bit publicly. I said to them after we talked about culture, it's a bit unfortunate, isn't it, that the 55 of us have had to come here to surface an organizational conflict. It's been on all your minds. You've been struggling with it for months. And in some cases, it appears that it could have been just a matter of a couple of you reaching out to each other, finding some shared ground, and starting to work on a common solution. And, you know, their heads were hanging a little low, but they heard it, they embraced it, and they've done remarkable things since then. So,
and, you know, that's not unique to any organization. There's always elephants in the room, or smelly skunks that we have to deal with. And same with our personal relationships, whether they be career-related or interpersonal outside the work world. You know, absolutely well said. John, the whole area, then, of transformation, the role for leaders, the additional skills, education, experiences that you would recommend. You know, let's say we've got a group of 25-year-olds in the room or 35-year-olds in the room to say, for you to be prepared to do this kind of stuff instinctively, and what kind of experiences, what would be your advice to professionals?
Oh, that's a great question. And although we tend to do more organizational change work, we almost always end up in coaching engagements. Sometimes it leads that way. I've got one CEO now that's, a soon-to-be CEO who's preparing to become the CEO of a large company, and he's wanting an advisor to come in to help prepare him for that leadership role. And I would say across a number of organizations, some very common things that are surfacing. One is if you're in a global organization, it's becoming so critical to be able to influence across cultures, and it's a skill that isn't well developed in a lot of leaders. They may have been very successful within their native culture, within their functional business, but that global agility and the ability to understand cultures and understand how they make decisions and how they want to process information and those aspects really help build trust and help you influence globally. That's a common thing. The other thing that's interesting when you get to the more senior levels is managing dilemmas or polarities or two opposing things that have benefit, but they're in conflict with each other. When we're restructuring, we talk about, well, is it better to centralize and get synergy and have centers of excellence, or is it better to decentralize and be close to the customer and know the customer and have the resources there to add the greatest value? And the answer is yes.
And in fact, I was going to tell you, it isn't just managing dilemmas and polarities. It's almost driving them for conversation, right? It's not, you're almost proactively going and grabbing them to see where it might pull you next.
Well, and that's where we're finding our executives need to spend more time.
Right.
You know, they're used to sitting in business reviews and talking through the numbers and maybe critiquing and pressuring for results. But their real value is in identifying things like these conflicts that are dilemmas, that are tough choices, and sorting those out. There's a great story about Jack Welch. Everybody has their good and bad stories, but there's one in particular that I like. He was at Crotonville, and he's famous for having these leadership events. And a group of his leaders really pressed him and said, "Look, Jack, one day you're on us for quarterly results. You're just pounding us. And the next day, you're talking about long-term strategies and what if 3 to 5 years from now, what do we need?" And Jack's response was, I could go out and find a bunch of quarterly performers. They're out there. I could get great ones. They could come in here and just drive quarterly performance. And there's also a lot of great leaders out there that just are fabulous and focused on building long-term value. He goes, "But the reason why you're on this leadership team and you're in this room is because we need leaders to do both."
Do both, right.
And it's a very challenging dilemma as an executive. That's why we're running these programs. That's why I'm trying to help provide some perspective about what's short-term and what's long-term and how do you balance those as leaders. Because that's the guidance the organization needs from us and from you as leaders. And I find that to be very true in a lot of the organizations we work in.
And I think that applies to for-profit, not-for-profits, school systems, government jobs as well. And in fact, I think this whole attribute of learning the skills, abilities, or seeing if you've got the makeup to be one that can play in this transformational change, this isn't going to be an optional opportunity. It's more and more being required. So the idea of influencing across cultures, for us all to step back and think, am I thinking hard about how I spend my vacations? What do I read? Have I thought about a second language? Even the choice of living in a different part of the country, if that makes sense at some point for you and your family, that those all build a repertoire of skills. And I think you probably also say, as you think about coaching people, is you can go explore and experiment on some of these things by what you do in your 5 to 9 life, not just your 9 to 5 life, in terms of what you might be doing after work to kind of test your ability, your resilience, your growth pattern.
Yeah, it's remarkable just how many leadership concepts are applied to your children.
Oh, or they apply to us, right?
Yeah, us, exactly.
This said by a father of a 10, 8, and 4-year-old, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep, I'm blessed. Yeah, absolutely. Those concepts apply, they can apply at your church, your civil organization, and a number of other places. They also are faced with the same sorts of, dilemmas or opposing decisions that have to be made, and you can help facilitate those discussions.
That's right.
You can interact with diverse communities out there that are cross-cultural or have other very unique dimensions to them that maybe you haven't been exposed to step out of your comfort zone and get those exposures. So there's things you can do close to home that still are a stretch and get you out of your comfort zone. Certainly when we're doing succession planning in organizations, we're always looking for stretch assignments
exactly.
for people, and many times that involves move overseas or a significant global project, something that just balances any gaps that we may want to shore up before we feel confident they're ready for the next level.
Exactly. We're speaking with, by the way, John Nelson. His organization is Business Transformation and Leadership Partners. Their website is btlpartner.com, based out of Madison, Wisconsin. Their clients are all over the country, actually global as well. John, what do you think, if you could characterize, how is it you've changed the most by helping others lead change?
Great question. Well, you know, I'm very passionate about this.
Right.
And I discovered this field while working at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, actually in Phoenix, Arizona. So many, many years ago in my early 20s, I was part of the opening team that opened up the Ritz-Carlton there by the Biltmore Fashion Plaza in Phoenix. And it was during that experience that I saw how the power of brand and strategy played into human resources.
Right.
And to culture, they built a very intentional culture. They had the human resource systems behind it to attract the right people, to develop them, to motivate them, engage them. And it was all about ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. You need to treat each other with as much respect in the back of the house as when you went out to serve or greet people at the front desk, et cetera. And it was a very powerful experience, and it was I was actually on a development path. But I have them to thank for discovering this field, and I went back to school to study this. And over the years, I've really grown to understand, I believe better, the minds and the needs of the leaders of these organizations. It started out early in my career. I was very focused in human resources. Spent the first 10, 12 years of my career out of grad school doing various human resource roles, and then really started to get into more strategy and organizational effectiveness work. And actually, I've had corporate responsibility for strategy, which is a bit of an uncommon responsibility for people that come out of human resources.
That's correct, yeah. But how forward-thinking that was for the firm you were with at the time.
Well, it was a great experience, and I appreciate that experience. And, you know, I think it plays out in the way I run our business and the way our consultants deal with our clients is it's really about knowing their business. We don't want to go in with any preconceived notions about the change or transformation they're facing. We're not dogmatic about models and approaches like many, many consultant firms are, which you have to kind of fit into their approach. We're very sensitive to understanding where the business is at holistically. We're very empathetic with these leaders. We've walked in their shoes. We've worked with a lot of senior leaders going through some very significant organizational changes. And I think the growth for me and my partners has been around that experience about living in the shoes of a CEO or an executive team.
Exactly.
And relating to their true business needs, as well as their personal and professional and leadership needs, and developing from there.
You bet. In fact, I think you said very early on this idea of looking at the whole system with a holistic view. That is a really important way to put it. Well, John Nelson, thank you so very much from Business Transformation Leadership Partners. Again, it's btlpartner.com. You can look for them out there in the Midwest, and we'll look forward to keeping track of interesting and transformation work you're doing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Zara. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.